How many times have you heard it said that in the run-up to a general election, or for that matter, a referendum, the political parties will promise the earth when the earth is not theirs to deliver? Whether it is housing, or the NHS, or Brexit, politicians of integrity may have a vision, but translating that vision into reality depends on factors which can be beyond their control. Who was it who said that promises are cheap because they are meant to be broken? In a conversation yesterday, someone told me that they were C of E, cynical of everything. And that set me thinking about the pastoral letter the Archbishops of Canterbury and York circulated last weekend, in which they offered their thoughts on the forthcoming general election. The Archbishops called on people to set aside apathy and cynicism, but it was their use of the word stability which set the cat among the pigeons. A Birmingham rector, along with dozens of clergy, argued that to focus so positively on such a politically freighted word, stability, seems to us at best as a case of desperate political naivety, or at worst, an implicit endorsement of one party in this election. While I am quite certain that the Archbishops had no intention of endorsing any party, I too take issue with their use of the word stability. For stability tends to favour those who have power. The Christian gospel, on the other hand, calls us to comfort the disturbed and to disturb the comfortable. The church should be the place where difficult questions are asked, where we debate how kingdom values of justice and peace can be realized in the structures of our society, and how Christians can exercise their responsibility to vote for the common good. The Christian gospel is political, but how do we debate politics without being seen as partisan? During the last general election, the right-wing press reacted hysterically to the House of Bishops' alleged Tory-bashing report, "Who is my neighbour?" On becoming Bishop of Manchester, William Temple resigned his membership of the Labour Party. How unlike Conrad Noel, the Red Victor of Thaxted, who in the 1920s hung both the red flag and the Sinn Féin flag in the nave of his Essex church alongside the flag of St. George. Is that any different to a North London church which today flies an LGBT rainbow flag from its tower? And it is that rainbow flag which takes us to the nub of the political debate today. For I would suggest that we've moved away from party politics into identity politics, where I take a political position based on some issue with which I identify, be it sexual orientation, I am gay, or gender expression, I'm a feminist, or religious faith, I am a Muslim, any of which I might perceive as setting me apart from you. Therein lies its danger, for identity politics can fuel divisiveness, contempt, and confrontation. The forthcoming general election, just like last year's referendum, will be shaped by notions of identity. Who do I choose to be? And that is a question that lies at the heart of our gospel reading. Jesus said to Thomas, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." In recalling those words, the Apostle John, or more likely a disciple of John, was attempting to give courage and hope to people who found themselves embroiled with their Jewish neighbours in the synagogue. It was intended to bring comfort to a group of Christian Jews struggling to maintain their identity. John was writing for a community which was fearful, vulnerable, and defensive. In our first reading, we heard of the martyrdom of Stephen. For them, Jesus was the way. His words, John's words, were intended to be pastoral, an attempt to comfort those of his friends who were afraid, who needed reassurance. Whether John meant anything more, whether or not he meant those words as a kind of challenge, a gauntlet thrown in the face of Jewish rivals when the fighting turned bitter, is anyone's guess. On the other hand, I can hear Jesus saying, "I am the way because your way is not mine." I find it inconceivable that Jesus might say, "I am the only way to God." Unfortunately, some of our brothers and sisters have used those words to say just that, not to offer comfort, but to browbeat those who don't believe in Jesus, or don't believe in the Jesus that I believe in, or don't read the Bible the way I read the Bible, or don't talk about their faith in the way I talk about my faith. To make such people feel like outsiders. There is only one way to heaven, and that is my way. Despite the way those words of Jesus have been distorted, it was necessary for Jesus to say, "I am the way, the truth, and the life," and to say it to people like Thomas and Philip and the rest of the disciples, people who said, in all honesty, "Jesus, we don't know the way. Please, show us the way." Those were disciples who had traveled the way with Jesus, who had watched his every move, heard his every word, and despite all that, were still blind to the truth. "Have I been with you all this time, Philip, and you still do not know me?" And what is true of Philip is equally true of you and me. You and I have been with Jesus all this time, and at times we still don't know him. We don't get the way. He insists on always moving among the people who are the outsiders: tax collectors, soldiers, prostitutes, lepers, people on the outside who haven't found the way in. Jesus is the one always ready to leave the 99 in the fold, to go out in the face of all the dangers and risk-taking of the search, just so that he can find the one that is lost. We could call Jesus Mr. Only Way. A sower went out to sow and scattered good seed everywhere, indiscriminately. That's the way of Mr. Only Way. Someone finds weeds growing in their wheat field, and Mr. Only Way says, "Let it be. Dandelions make good wine." When Mr. Only Way tells a story, it's about a father and two sons, one of whom stays at home and kept the house rules, and the other, well, he was a loser and squandered everything. But lo and behold, the father loved them both. Mr. Only Way compares himself to the Good Shepherd, the one who lays down his life for the flock, and reveals that there are sheep which aren't even part of the flock, but they still belong to him, and he cares for them. Mr. Only Way says, "That's the way I am. That's the truth I am. That's the life I am." Mr. Only Way offers us that way which is challenging. It is a challenge to every political manifesto that seeks to exclude and belittle. It is a challenge to every lifestyle that presumes to think that only some have a right to what they need and the rest are expendable because they have no value in God's eyes. For those of us who have on the 8th of June the opportunity to place a cross on a ballot paper, let us think of that other cross and ask ourselves this: are my eyes open to God? Amen.